Dedicated Leila Nishmas Achsa Bas Rav Meir. Pashas Bahar Bechu Kaisai.
Also dedicate today is a V-Day. Today is a World War II ended.
Okay, that's right.
Right, about half a million.
Yeah, today's a big day also.
Jewish soldiers falling.
Important as well. Yeah, very important. I agree. So Pashas Bahar Bechu Kaisai, again, because it's a double parasha, we're going to try to get to as much as we can. If we had to look at an overall view of Pashas Bahar, in my opinion, the Torah teaches us about an idea called Shemitah and Yovel, which carries both a direct connection to agriculture, one's relationship with the working of the land, one's relationship of the land. Then we also have a concept of Avadim, a person owns a slave, a Jewish slave, an Eved Ivri, and after a certain amount of time, that slave goes free, no matter how much money he paid for him. At Yovel, all Avadim, everyone goes free, the land goes free. A lot of freedoms take place throughout Shemitah and Yovel. And then later on in the parasha, Parashas Bahar, the Torah really deals with some other interesting issues of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, and the personal relationship between human beings. But not just the regular human beings. The Torah discusses the downtrodden Jew, the one who's in a bad situation. He was sold as a slave because either he stole or he was short on money. And then the Torah discusses interest and not taking interest and all these other things. But there's the emphasis towards the end of the parasha on the Jew who's not doing great. He's in a bad situation. He needs help. He needs guidance. He needs assistance. And the Torah discusses that as well towards the end of the parasha. The beginning of the parasha, the Torah opens up that Hashem spoke to Moshe at Har Sinai. What did Hashem tell Moshe? The rules of Shemitah. What is Shemitah? That we're supposed to work for 6 years. The land, it's all agriculturally based, only in the land of Israel. After 6 years of working, the seventh year, you stay away from the field. It's Shabbos LaHashem, the field is not yours, it becomes Hefker, and you step back from the field. So Rashi quotes a Medrash, Ma'inyan Shemitah Eitzel Har Sinai. What does the mitzvah of Shemitah have to do with Har Sinai? Everything was at Har Sinai. It says in the Pasuk, Hashem says to Moshe at Har Sinai, the rules of Shemitah. Everything was at Har Sinai. That's where we got all the Torah. So Rashi says, it teaches me just like Shemitah, the mitzvah of Shemitah, Kloseh uproteha, its general rules and details were set at Sinai, so too all rules were set at Sinai. So again, same question. Why did you pick out Shemitah? There was many mitzvahs of the Torah that were said, or all the mitzvahs were said at Har Sinai. Why Shemitah? So, what's possible, one could suggest, is that what's special about Har Sinai was we know that at Har Sinai, we were forced to accept the Torah. Koifa aleim har kiyis. Hashem put a mountain over our head and said, guys, if you don't take the Torah, shom tehei kivuraschem, this is where you're going to all be buried. We were, part of the Torah was accepted against our will. Why is that important for us to know? Because when a person accepts something against their will, he can't come later and say, I didn't sign up for it. You never signed up for it in the first place. You were forced into it. Don't come to me 3 years later and say, you know what? I made a mistake. I want to opt out. You never opted in. You were forced in the first place. Therefore, by the mitzvah of Shemitah, it's very easy for a person to say, this is just too hard for me. I can't. I want to opt out. Says the Torah, there's no opt-in, opt-out option. You're stuck. Obviously in a positive way. But the idea is it's not up to you to decide I can't handle it. If you make a conscious decision, you can come back later and say, I have regret. I made a bad decision. I didn't realize. That's the whole idea by nedarim. Person makes a neder, he realizes, I didn't realize what it means not to go a week without eating pizza. I have charata. I want to take back. But if you were forced, if someone says you're not allowed to eat pizza, well, it doesn't matter. You can't. So therefore, the Torah is telling us that just like by Har Sinai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forced us to take the Torah, we can't come 10 years later and say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is too hard. I want out. So too, the mitzvah of Shemitah, which is going to be hard. It's a very difficult mitzvah, the mitzvah of Shemitah. The Torah says there's no option of opting out because you're forced to do the mitzvah of Shemitah just like you were forced to be mekabel the Torah at Har Sinai. There's a pasuk at Tehillim. The pasuk tells us, Baruch Hu Hashem Alachov Giboyre Koyach. Blessed, Hashem blesses those that are strong. Oh, you said, Dvarai Hu Lihu, do His word. Who is considered a strong? Who does the Torah? Who does Hashem consider to be a gibor? What's true strength in the eyes of Hashem? There's two pshatim in the Medrash. One pshat, it's referring to Klal Yisrael. At the time when Klal Yisrael, right around this time of the year, Shavuos, when Klal Yisrael got up and said, Nasa v'nishma, we will do, and then we will hear, that's a gibor. That's an expression of strength. The other pshat in the Medrash, you know what a gibor is? someone who guards the rules of Shemitah. A farmer who does not work the seventh year, he's a Gibor. Says Rabbi Shawais, it's really the same idea. How did Klal Yisrael say Nasav Nishma? If someone comes over to you and says, I want to make a business deal with you, but I'm not going to tell you any of the details of the business deal, you would never sign. It doesn't make any sense. It goes against human tendency. Human tendency is we want to know what we're getting before we get it. Don't tell me something that I'll find out later. I want to know everything now. So when Klal Yisrael said Nasav Nishma, what they did was they broke the tendency of human being. They broke what he calls Tevas Anushi. The natural inclination of a person is to say, no way, I got to know more about it. I need to research first. And then Klal Yisrael sat down and researched it and did like all the other nations did and said, that I'm opting out. Says about Shavuot, when Klal Yisrael jumped to Nasav Nishma, what they really did was they completely detached themselves from normal human being life. They decided this is bigger and greater than me and us, and we're going to do it. He says that's what a farmer does. When a farmer walks away from his field on the seventh year, that is totally against human nature. No one who puts all that time and energy into plowing and making a field would just get up and walk away, put his hands up in the air and say, I'm done. It's completely against Teva Anushi. It's against human nature. Therefore, that's the connection between Har Sinai. What Klal Yisrael did at Har Sinai was Gevura. That was strength. To be able to say, I'm not going to research this first and just jump in on faith, that's Gevura. What we do by Shemitah, says Rabbi Shawais, is Gevura. For a person to be able to walk away from his field and not make a dime, is Gevura. And that's why the Torah put the two together, to show us this lesson that they both come from the same idea. They're both about being Shviras Hateva. A person has to break normal human being-like experiences. And that's really our whole Avodah in the month, in the days leading up to Shavuos. In order to be Mekabel Torah, we have to break a lot of our bad traits. That's why Rabbi Aaron Cutler writes that there's 48 days up till counting to the Sfira. That gives us a chance and every day to work on a different Midah. Because the Mishnah says in Maseches Avos, there's 48 character traits that you need to acquire Torah. Every day, we have to break and perfect a different trait. And that's, I think, why many people have the kasha. When we count Svira, it seems very strange. We're counting from when we brought the Karban Omer. If we're counting to Kabbalah Satayra, shouldn't we be counting how many days left to Kabbalah Satayra? Instead of saying how many days from Pesach, we should be counting how many days to Kabbalah Satayra. Why is it that we don't count that way? If I was counting down to a very big experience, something that's very exciting, you don't count backwards. You count looking how many days left, how many days left, not how many days from there. So the answer is no, because what we're really counting is, I want to be far away from Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why? Because when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they weren't necessarily in the greatest point of spirituality. They were actually at their lowest point of spirituality. They just got out. If they would have stayed a day longer, forget it. They were at the lowest point. And I'm showing I'm a day further removed from that lifestyle that I used to be. We know that on the second day of Pesach, we bring a carbon, the Omer. The carbon Omer was full of barley, Se'orim. Barley, says the Mefarshim, is animal food. Humans don't eat barley, except in the Chalent. Barley, predominantly for animals. When we come to Shavuos, we bring wheat. Because we show that before we have a Torah, we're like an animal. What's life about? We're nothing. It's a meaningless life. When we have the Torah, we become human beings. Now we can eat wheat. So every single day of the Sefirah, what we're really doing is we're trying to get further away from that lifestyle, that Mitzrayim lifestyle that we got stuck into. We're saying, I'm a further away, 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 all the way till I'm completely ready to be Mekabel the Torah. So it's similar to what Rabbi Shavuos is suggesting, that we have to break these bad traits that either we picked up from Mitzrayim, picked up from our neighbors, picked up from other people. We have to break these midas, and to prepare ourselves for Shavuos is why every single day we work towards perfecting a different midah. Why do we have the mitzvah of Shemitah? It's an interesting mitzvah. Very illogical mitzvah from a financial point of view. The Torah says, work 6 years, spend the time, the money, and the effort working. Work the field. Seventh year, take off. Go on vacation. What's pshat? Why would the Torah do such a thing? So the Medrash writes, Mefurish, the Medrash says, that the reason for this mitzvah is to learn a lesson that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in control. It's His world. You work for Hashem, you don't work for yourself. You're not the CEO of your field. You're a worker. And if the boss says we're closed, you're closed. That's it. Says the Medrash, the lesson of Shemitah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is reminding us, I'm the one who, I run the field. It's not your field, it's my field. It's my world. I do what I want. The Kli Yakar in his commentary to the Chumash brings down two other pshatim for Shemitah, both found in Mishnayim. One pshat, he says, is that the whole Shemitah is for the benefit of the land. The land needs a break. You can't keep working the land day after day after year. The land will not be successful going forward. The land needs a break, Zakta Kli Yakar. So since the land needs a break, we take a vacation. Everyone knows that studies have been showed in companies that the more vacation days people have, the more productive they are. People function better when they are relaxed. So therefore, says the Kli Yakar, the land needs a break. It can't continue working, and therefore that's the godless of Shemitah. The Kli Yakar rejects this pshat because he says, Chazal tell us that the reason for the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash was because Klal Yisrael was not careful with the Shemitah. So ask the Kli Yakar, if the whole Shemitah is merely just for the benefit of the land, that's a deserving to destroy the Beis HaMikdash? It sounds like from the Psukim that this is a spiritual thing, not just a physical thing. So he rejects that pshat. Quotes another pshat. He quotes this from the Akedah, who says that the purpose of this mitzvah is to remember Chidush Olam, remember the creation of the world. V'liskor Yemois Olam V'soif Yemei Chalada. Remember life. You know, there's an end, there's a beginning. Remember, put you in a perspective of life. He doesn't like any of these pshat. And he ends up saying his own pshat, which is the pshat we're all familiar with, that the lesson of Shemitah, says the Kli Yakar, is because we all, as human beings, fall into the same trap called Koichi V'Oitzim Yodi Asal Yisachayel. We always think we were the ones that were successful. If we do well, it's because we're so smart. If we win a war, if we win a war, it's because we were the best trained, we have the best guns and the biggest tanks, it's all about us. And this is a mistake that we fall into not only when we go to battle, this is when we're successful in anything in life, we do a good business deal, we say, look how smart I am. I am so smart. I outsmarted the other side, and I won the business deal. I am so smart. I went to the best colleges, I went to the best education, I am so smart. Says the Kli Yakar, this is a mistake that we often make, called Koichi V'Oitzim Yodi, my strength and my greatness, also Esachayel Hazeh, made this war. When it comes to wars, many times Klal Yisrael falls into this trap, that it's about me, and we have to realize it's not about you, Kosh Baruch Hu made it happen. Therefore, how, says the Kli Yakar, do we prevent this from happening? When a person realizes that he has to stop working the field, he says to himself, what do you mean? But it's mine. And what did you do? You're nothing. You're merely a player in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, says the Kli Yakar, it's unbelievable what he writes over here. He says, "Ulefize yuishaschayu galus." Now I understand why a person goes to galus, why Klal Yisrael gets kicked out of Eretz Yisrael if they don't keep the Shemitah. Because it means they don't have a emunah in Hashem. V'hem lo bitchu. They don't believe in Hashem. They don't believe in anything. They think they're running the show. If I don't keep the Shemitah, the statement I'm making, says the Kli Yakar, I'm running the show. It's all about me. Says the Kli Yakar, if that's your attitude, you can't be in Israel. You can't be in Eretz Yisrael. You gotta get out of here. You can't be in a Beis HaMikdash. You have to come to the realization because Baruch Hu's running the world. And he writes, it's like the mon. We have to realize, what was the mon? People lived in a desert with nothing. No vending machines, no takeout, nothing. And they all lived. Because the Kosh Baruch Hu provided for them with special spiritual food. Says the Kli Yakar, that's what Shemitah is supposed to remind us. That we all, Baruch Hashem, have food to eat. Not because we're so smart and we're so ingenious and we're so great. It's because we do our thing and the Kosh Baruch Hu helps us out. He says that's the realization that Klal Yisrael has when they have the Shemitah. When the Shemitah comes, they say to themselves that I am not so smart. I am not this ingenious fellow who came up with this novel way of plowing or of reaping things. I'm working my best because the Kosh Baruch Hu put me on this planet to be busy. That's what I'm here for. Adam la'omel yulad. We're here to be busy. Supposed to toil, do what we need to do. Supposed to go to work. It's a mitzvah to go to work. Provide for your family. You have to do all these things. But when you step back and say, what am I? It's not about me. I'm just doing the will of Hashem. Therefore, says the Kli Yakar, that's the lesson. And the truth is, we find there's a Mishnah in Ovis. The Mishnah in Ovis says that there's four major Averis that Klal Yisrael gets gullus for. Three are the cardinal Averis: Gilui Arayos, illicit relationships, murder, and Avodah Zarah. You know what number four on the list is? Not keeping the Shemitah. So many of the Farshim ask, really? Not keeping the Shemitah is up there with the other three cardinals? And the answer is, of course. Because what's wrong with Shemitah? It means you don't believe in Hashem. You don't believe in God. If you really believed in Hashem, you'd say that the way I lived the first 6 years is the way I'm going to live in the seventh year. If you really believe that Hashem is running the show, so why would you not keep the Shemitah? The answer is because you don't believe it. You believe you're running the show. And you think, you know why you ate those 6 years? It's because you are such a talented farmer, you were eating because you worked hard. Says the Mishnah Novice, no. If you realize it's not you, it's really HaKadosh Baruch Hu, So then you'd be able to be Shomer the Shemitah. Reb Shlomo Bloch was a Talmud of Chavetz Chaim. He points at something very, very interesting. We just mentioned earlier, Chazal tell us that the reason for the destruction of the first base of Mikdash was due to the fact that we didn't keep the Shemitah. Which many of us will say, okay, you know, it's not great, but, you know, that's a reason to lose the base of Mikdash. So the Kliyok explained to us why it's so bad. Why don't we have a second base of Mikdash? That's what another Gemara tells us, because of Sinas Chinam. Points out this Reb Shlomo Bloch, he says, one second. The first base of Mikdash was rebuilt. We got back on track. The second base of Mikdash, we're still not yet back on track. We're still in trouble. He says, you know what that must mean? It means the first base of Mikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized we did a sin, but it was somewhat, HaKadosh Baruch Hu understood where we were coming from. The Nisayon, the desire to work on Shemitah was so strong and so powerful, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, okay, I see you can't overcome it, so I'm willing to move on. Yet the second base of Mikdash, we still haven't rebuilt, we still haven't built the third. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks we can master this. We could improve. We don't want to. Says Reb Shlomo Bloch, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, you can master and perfect the Midah of Sinas Chinam. You don't want to. I'm not going to give you another base of Mikdash until you do it. The first base of Mikdash, I'm going to give you some wiggle room. I understand it's very difficult not to work on the Shemitah. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, you paid your time, I'm going to build another base of Mikdash. But this Chorban says, Reb Shlomo Bloch, we're still sitting here, and you know why? Because we haven't yet, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu demands and expects us to be able to fix it, and we haven't yet fixed it. Therefore, we're still sitting up until today in a status of destruction of the base of Mikdash. We mentioned earlier that those who keep the Shemitah are considered Gibayrim. They're considered strong men. There's another medrash that says, who are the heroes of Klal Yisrael? You know who the heroes of Klal Yisrael are? The Jews who guard the Shemitah. They're considered heroes. Asks Rabban Cutler, why are they heroes? The Pasuk says later on in the Parsha, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises them that they're going to have enough food to live through the seventh year. So why are you such a hero? HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to you and says, listen, if you take off the next 6 months, I will provide for you, you'll have all the money you need, just go learn. Okay, that's a hero. A hero. The guy jumps to a burning bush. That's a hero. But over here, but the Torah says, I'm going to provide for you. It says, I will take care of you. So where is the great heroic lifestyle? Says the Baron Cutler, it doesn't matter. The Nisayon to walk away from a project that you invested so much time and energy is so difficult. Although you have all the promises in the world, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you, and you believe it, it's not easy to walk away from something like that. It takes heroic attitude. Therefore, says Rabbi Kotler, it's something like that to walk away from something you toiled, and you worked, and you mutchered, and you spent time. That, again, just remember, these farmers, that was all they did. That was their entire life. Right? That their whole life was their field. It was their entire chias. They worked the field whenever there was light, and whenever it was dark, they went to sleep, and they got up, they worked the field again. That's all they had. Right? There was no emails, nothing else to do all day. It was all day long in the field. To get walk away from your entire life, although you're promised and you believe in it, says Rabbi Kotler, still requires unbelievable amounts of gvura. Gemar Pesachim says that if someone has no land, he doesn't have to be Oyle Regal on Yom Tov. Why? So the Mefarshim explain that the purpose of Aliyas LeRegel is you leave your house and you travel. The person realizes he leaves his house, he realizes that it's not forever. I'm in somewhere else. I'm in a new community. I'm in someone else's house. My property is not as much mine as I think it is. Says the Mefarshim, if you don't have karka, you know this. You realize it's not yours. You're a renter. I'm a renter. I can tell you how it feels to be a renter. It's a lousy feeling. Nothing's yours. Tomorrow, your lease is up. They throw you out. Person owns something. It's mine. I get it forever. But if you're a traveler, you don't own anything, so you don't need to be a lorego. You understand what life is like. You know you don't have any hold in anything, and tomorrow or a week from now, you're gone. Therefore, you don't need to be Oyle Regel. The realization of owning property is a beautiful thing, but it comes along with a price tag of complacency. This is my land. You can't kick me off my land. I own it. This is mine. Chavetz Chaim, the famous story with the Chavetz Chaim, where a fellow came to Chavetz Chaim way before World War II, before World War I. Came to Chavetz Chaim, he just bought a new house. He wanted a bracha from the Chavetz Chaim about his house and success, he should do well. So the Chavetz Chaim gave him a bracha, he should enjoy the house. But the Chavetz Chaim told him before he left, he said, I'm letting you know one thing. Just remember, it's not your house. Remember these words, it's not your house. The fellow didn't know what the Chavetz Chaim meant by that, but he said, okay. Fast forward 20 years later, the Nazis marched into his town and they come to his house and they kick him out of his house. He tells the Nazis, it's my house. The Nazi looks him in the eye and says, it's not your house. The Yitzhak, I realize now what the Chafetz Chaim was telling us. All these possessions in this world aren't really ours. That's what the Torah has, this whole process of Shemit and Yovel, to remind us. These things in this world are ours for a few years. We hope for many years. But this is not long-lasting ownership. Long-lasting ownership is only those things of spirituality. You can't take the table and chairs with you to the next world. Right? Everyone knows, there's no pockets in the kittel. The thing we bury people in have no pockets. There's a reason for it. You can't take credit cards up there. None of this is going to go with you. So the Torah is reminding us that these things which we spend so much time on, that don't really matter all that much, the Torah swaps it around to realize there's no real ownership in any of these types of things. The Torah tells us that when we have the Yovel, so the Avadim, these slaves that I've used, became part of my family, they became hired help, they go free at the Yovel. The Sefer HaChinuch writes something which was, today, everyone knows, when the Sefer HaChinuch wrote it, it was not so known to the psychological world. He writes, the Sefer HaChinuch lived in the 1200s, 1300s. He writes, we sound a shofar every Yom Kippur that's of the Yovel to remind the people that your slaves are supposed to go back to their owners. Why do we do this, says the Sefer HaChinuch? Because there are people that are suffering. I'm losing my Eved, right? There are plenty of Jewish women who have never cooked a day in their life. They had an Eved. They never made a bed. They never did anything. So this is hard for them to part with their Eved. So why do we sound the shofar? We sound the shofar to remind Klal Yisrael we're all in the same boat. We're all losing our avodim. It's not just you. It's not just this block and this community. We're all experiencing this, so to say, uncomfortability together. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, when we feel like we're not the only one in the world suffering, it takes a little bit of the sting away. When we feel like we're not the only one suffering and everyone else is also in our boat, it doesn't make it as painful. Today, psychologists understand this. This is what we call today. If I know you're in pain and you know I'm in pain with you, it makes it a little easier. Therefore, says the Sefer HaChinuch, when Klal Yisrael came to the realization that we're all losing our hired help, right? If Trump would ever get his way and we'd all lose our cleaning ladies, we'd all be depressed together. We'd all be saddened by the fact that we all are in the same boat. Says the Sefer HaChinuch, this is a realization that when a person is suffering, sometimes he has to realize, you're not the only person that has a hard life. We all like to believe that we're the only ones that have it hard and everyone else has it easy. My neighbor, oh, his life is way better. We all suffer. Different issues. We're all suffering. A person comes to the realization that we all have hardships in life and no one's having a smooth sailing life. It makes it a little bit easier to deal with some of the roughness that life throws our way. There's a Zohar HaKadosh in this week's parasha, which is worth mentioning. I don't really quote too many Zohars, but this one really stuck out to me. It says in the Pasuk, when discussing the idea of Shemitah, the Torah writes, "Bishnas HaYovel HaZois." In this year of Yovel, Tashuvu Ish Alachuzasai, a man should return to his inheritance, which means that every 50th year, land went back to who the original owner of the land was. So if I buy a piece of land, I can own it for till 50th year, and the Yovel year, I lost it. It went back to whoever the original owner is. Says the Zohar HaKadosh, you read the pasuk like this, Bishnas HaYovel HaZois. In this year, Tashuvu Ish Alachuzasai, we will go back to our inheritance. The Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt and Mashiach will come. What's Hazois? He writes, Hazois is the number, Zois is 408. So it's the year 5408. That was the year Mashiach was supposed to come. What year was 5408 from creation of the world? It was the year 1648. Now, 1648, not only did Mashiach come, as we all know, it was a terrible, terrible year for Jewish people. That was Tach V'Tat, Chmelnytsky. That was the terrible riots, the Chmelnytsky riots that destroyed Jewish communities. The Cossacks, 1648, 1649, it was terrible for the Jews. So not only didn't Mashiach come, it was a very bad year for the Jewish life. So just an interesting fact, and Mefarshim asked, later commentaries ask, well, what happened? Did we get it wrong? We mixed up the dates? So they had different pshatim that sometimes, if it's not yet ready to be the Yeshua, it ends up becoming the opposite, a total destruction, as opposed to being a salvation. But I just thought it was interesting to mention how that was, based on this pasuk, and this week's parasha, we were convinced, and Svarim were written about this, that Mashiach was going to come in the year 1648. The Al-Shulch HaKadosh points out that the whole lesson of Shemitah teaches us something that throughout history some Jews did not appreciate. The lesson of Shemitah is that the land of Eretz Yisrael has inherited Kedusha. We look at Shemitah as an obligation of the Gavra. I can't work in my field. I can't do this. Says the Al-Shulch, it's not you. It's the land can't be worked. because the land of Eretz Yisrael has intrinsic value. Not because it's the Jewish people. It's because it's the land of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why the Jewish people couldn't have a land somewhere else. We couldn't go to Uganda. That wouldn't have been a fulfillment of what the Kedushas are. Eretz Yisrael is Kaddish because this land, this property, the soil itself is Kaddish. The Gemara talks about in the end of Ksubis. Different Amorim used to kiss the ground of Eretz Yisrael because the land is Kaddish. The lesson of Shemitah, says the Alshach, is the realization that this land is Kaddish. That's why we don't have Shemitah in America. Why is there no Shemitah in America? Because American land has no holiness to it. There's no spirituality to American land. Eretz Yisrael, that the land itself has Kedusha. Therefore, the land itself is restricted and bound by mitzvahs. Obviously, the land itself doesn't have any dinim, so it's the human to the land. But the lesson of Shemitah, says the Alshach, is that we have to remember that Eretz Yisrael itself has intrinsic Kedusha, which is why the Ramban was of the opinion that when a person does Averis in Eretz Yisrael, it's worse than doing an Averis in America, because you're stepping on holy land and doing something that's not holy. It's so much so worse when you're in a holy place. Which is why the other Ramban writes in Sefer Bereishis that the Avos only kept the Torah in Eretz Yisrael, not outside Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael has a Kedusha. There's no question, there's no doubt, there's a specific Kedusha and doing mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. Rav Shechter says over that he knows a Mishuluch who, whenever he comes to America to raise funds, he'll cheshbin his ticket that he should be able to daven in Eretz Yisrael. Because based on the Ramban, that everything you do in Eretz Yisrael, mitzvahs done in Eretz Yisrael on a different level than mitzvahs done in Chutz Laretz. So if he can make a flight that he can daven a tefillah more in Eretz Yisrael and less in Chutz Laretz, he'll try to do that. Because everything you do in Eretz Yisrael is magnified on a Kedusha level because of the actual Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. And that's really seen, says the Alshach, from this week's parasha. Right in the middle of this discussion in the Torah about guard of Shemitah, the Torah throws us for a completely, seemingly irrelevant topic. Says the Torah, if you're going to make a purchase with another Jew, al toinu ishes achiv, don't do what's known today as oino. What is oino? So Rashi learns over here, this means oino is mamon. The Gemara discusses in the fourth parak of Bamitzia, overcharging. Oinos mamon means you overcharge. There's technically oinos of undercharging, but there's rules and regulation of how much you're allowed to overcharge, undercharge, business ethics, we'll call it. How much you're allowed to charge. So the Mefarshim are all very troubled. Why now? We're in the middle of talking about land and the agricultural, and now you're telling me I'm not allowed to overcharge? Not only that, the halacha is, there's no prohibition of overcharging for land. The Gemara says land, there's no set price. People will buy. Look at the real estate market today. There's no price. People will buy anything, wherever. I can show you homes that are teeny. 18-footer homes, three are going for almost $1 million in my community. Because people are willing to buy it. That's it. There's no set price. Right? You go to take that same house in the middle of America, no one would spend more than $75,000 on it. There is no price. So asks the Sefer, base of. He says, I don't understand. If land is not even is subjected to this rule, why does the Torah take a break from talking about land and talking about this idea of overcharging people in a monetary world? There's no connection. So he explains that's not true. It's very much connected. He says, because why? What's Shemitah all about? Shemitah is the realization that I'm not the one controlling the money. I'm not the one bringing in the parnasa. I'm working as a servant from Hashem. I do what I try. And the money comes because Hashem gives me the money. It's a lesson of realization of your role. Why would I overcharge my friend in business? Because I don't really believe Hashem provides for me. I believe that if I want to get ahead, I got to do what I got to do. That's not the Torah's value. The Torah's value is you do what's right and Hashem will provide for you. Therefore, it exactly does fit the narrative. It's the narrative of what? That you have to believe who's providing for you. If you can walk away from Shemitah and you can say to yourself, I'm not running the field, Hashem's running the field. So you can say from a business deal, how can I overcharge you? Overcharging is a statement that I feel like I can only get ahead, I can only make money if I do incorrect. That's not the Torah's way. And therefore, that's why the Torah writes it right next to each other. What's interesting, there's a discussion in Halacha, is there a prohibition of oino with a non-Jew? Overcharging a non-Jew. We know, sadly enough people do not know, that there is a prohibition of stealing from a guy. Kenevas akum is asur. You are not allowed to deliberately steal from a guy. Just to note, when you steal from the government, you're stealing from Jews also. It's not just goyim you're stealing from. So that's also out. The only thing the Gemara says is permitted is what's called ta'os akum. If the goyim makes a mistake, then technically you're allowed to keep it. Or aveidus akum, a lost object of a non-Jew is technically permitted to a Jew. There's a very famous comment from the Ber HaGoylo on the side of the Shulchan Aruch in Choshe Mishpat, Simin Shin Memches. And he writes the following line. He says, I've seen many Jews that when they had these types of questionable areas of Oinos Akum, Avedis Akum, they decided not to make the Kiddush Hashem. They decided to go by the letter of the law, and it didn't work out for them. Says the Baragad, I saw so many people who went the Kiddush Hashem route, and they decided to go, we'll call Lefnim Meshuras HaDin, and they saw, not only for themselves, they saw for their family that the money lasted for many generations. They saw that it goes a lot further than you believe. So although it's questionable, says the Baragoylet, his comment in Shulchan Aruch, he thinks it's a good idea that a person should go beyond when it's Shaykh Kiddush Hashem. Now today, it's not so easy because today everything's online, so no one knows who you are, what you are. But if you have a situation where you go into a store and you actually return something in person, it's a Kiddush Hashem. It seems like it's definitely a worthwhile endeavor to make a Kiddush Hashem. There's another parsha right after this, or a few psukim from there, called Einos Devorei. That means you speak harshly to another person, speak negatively to a person, Einos Devorei. In that parsha, the Torah writes over there, V'loisoinu ish es amisoi. A person should not speak harsh to his amisoi. Over here the Torah writes, Al teinu ish es ochiv. Don't do aino to your brother. Why the change in terminology? So the Shlach Kaddish says beautifully. He says, over here we're talking about money. He says, money? It's very possible that you and your brother will have a blood brother, will have a monetary dispute, a monetary issue, and you might want to overcharge him. So Dr. Torah, don't overcharge your brother. But when it comes to verbal aino, that's not a brother. Brothers wouldn't do that to each other. They wouldn't talk. They rip each other off of money. That they would do. But they wouldn't talk mean to each other. That's just nature. You're raised in the same home. You're not going to talk bad about your brother or to your brother. So that's what the Torah writes when it comes to Einos Dibur. The Torah writes Amisoi. Doesn't write your brother. Instead, the Torah writes Narachich. The Meshech Chachma points out that the reason why the Torah makes the fields Hefker in the Yovel year is to make your Nesoyin a little easier. If you owned your field, and you were working the field, and all of a sudden some guy comes and rips it out from under you, it's very difficult. But as it is, you're not working the field anyways, and you don't get to reap any of the benefit. So then it's a little easier, says the Meshech Chachma, to give it back in the Yovel year. That's why, says the Meshech Chachma, HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'davka set it up this way, that in the Yovel year, the field goes back to the original owner. So explains the Meshech Chachma. Right away, in the middle of our Chosh Mishpat discussion, we're introduced to the Aveira of Ribbis, interest. A Jew is not allowed to lend with interest. What exactly is so terrible about lending with ribbis? So the Kliyoker has a mechudash pshat, in my opinion, to why ribbis is so bad. Says the Kliyoker, you know why ribbis is so bad? He says, because when a person lends with ribbis, he loses emuna. He says, why? He says, if I do a business transaction with you, I have no idea if I'll make money. I hope. I don't know for sure I'll make money. He says, ribbis? That's a no-brainer. You got to make the money back. He owes you the interest. It sits in the bank. It's guaranteed money. Says the Kliyok, guaranteed money always leads you away from Emunah. So writes the Kliyok, an unbelievable chiddush. He says, the reason for the prohibition of ribbis, why you're not allowed to charge another Jew an interest, says the Kliyok, is because it's going to lead you away from believing that Kosh Baruch Hu runs the show. So Kliyok asks, 1 second, so why is the borrower not allowed to have ribbis? I understand the lender. What about the borrower? He says, because the borrower is helping the lender do an Aveira. I asked the Kliyoker, so why are you allowed to take ribbis from a guy? Everyone knows ribbis from a guy is permitted. He says, because guy, you can never trust him. You never know if they're really going to pay you back. You hope they'll pay you back. But a Jew, you know he's going to pay you back. The money's in the bank. Says the Kliyoker, when the money's in the bank, that already takes a little bit away from your emunah. I always thought that pshat and ribbis was a different reason. The problem with ribbis is because what are you doing? You're lending someone money. He needs the money. That's a chesed, an act of chesed. When you take an interest on it, you just made it all about you, instead of about him. When someone comes to you and says, I need money, I'm short on money, I need money. So you're doing an act of chesed. You're thinking about someone else. When you make it about you, because how am I going to turn a profit, you just switch the focus to being about me than being about the other person. Sometimes in life, we have to stop thinking about ourselves. It's not always about us. It's how can I help someone without anything else involved. Not how I'm going to turn a profit, how it's going to make me look. It's all about you. That's, I believe, why the Torah has such a distaste for the idea of ribbis, because it becomes so selfish. How can I make money on this? It's not about you. How can this guy get out of debt? That's what it's about. And that's why the Torah has such strong prohibitions about ribbis. Chazal tell us that if a person lends in ribbis, he does not come up with Tchiyas HaMeis. So brought down in Yushalmi. He does not merit to be brought back up after everyone dies. He will not be one of those people because he lent with ribbis. That's how severe the Aveira is when someone lends with ribbis. He does not merit to be part of those who are brought up into the next world. Okay, we're significantly short on time, so I'm just going to share over one var on Parshas B'chukos, which I just listened to on my way up here, and I thought it's very appropriate. It says in the pasuk, "In B'chukos teileichu, if you will go in my chukim, that's mitzvah say tishmayu." So Rashi learns this referring to being amul b'toyr. I heard a pshat from the Mor v'shemesh, who said the pasuk is totally different. The pasuk means like this: "In B'chukos teileichu, if B'chukos teileichu, if you're going to work in order so you can keep my chukim." The Chavit Hashem, the Archaim HaKadosh, writes that when a Jew goes to work every single day, and he works 9 to 5, and the reason why he goes to work every single day is so he can have food and money to give his children and give his family a Torah life, he gets schar for that. Which means it's an unbelievable concept. You can have two people going to work, a Jew and a non-Jew. The guy sits in his office 9 to 5 getting all stressed out and all upset, and he walks away with a paycheck. While a religious Jew goes to work every day 9 to 5, comes back home with a paycheck, pays his kids' tuition, makes sure he has kosher food, makes sure he can afford the Jewish lifestyle, and he gets rewarded for working 9 to 5. Because his attitude is, I would love to serve Hashem, but I need to live. We live in a world today that you can't survive on ear. You need to have money. So we all go to work so we can provide. Says the pasuk, in b'chukosai teilechu, if you're going teilechu, if you're going b'chukosai, b'shvil chukosai, if you're going to work so you can do my chukim, if your whole teilechu in life, if your purpose for working is not just so I can be rich, I'm going to work so I can keep mitzvahs. It's very expensive today to buy lulav and esrog. It's very expensive to buy matzah. These things cost money. And if you don't work, you're not going to have money. You can't keep Hashem's mitzvahs. In b'chukosai teilechu, if a person's whole going to work is b'chukosai, is in order to keep my rules, then, says the pasuk, I am going to give him terrific, wonderful things and blessings and all these great things. Such a whole different outlook when a person has to go to work every morning and it's not enjoyable to go to work. We have our better days and our worst days, but if a person remembers that when he's going to work, if he's doing it for this reason, he actually gets schar for that. I can go to work his whole life, 25, 30 years, putting in day after day, and he comes up after Shemayim, he gets tons of schar, as if he sat and learned the Beis Medrash a whole day. Says the Chavetz Chaim, that's only if when you're off from work, you're using your time wisely. If a guy's off from work and he's still not doing anything, so then his 9 to 5 wasn't just to provide for his family. His 9 to 5 was because he enjoyed getting away from his wife and kids. Then, says the Chavetz Chaim, you don't get schar as if you learned. But if a person goes to work and says, I'd love to learn more, I just can't. I got bills to pay, I got to send the kids to yeshiva, make chasanas. I would love to learn all day. I'd love to be in kailo, but I got to pay my bills. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, then I look at your working as if you wish you could be learning, I give you schar for that. But if a person, when he has time to learn, doesn't learn, so that's not the pshat. He just likes to work because it's enjoyable. Then he doesn't get the schar. He doesn't get the same reward of learning. So it's a whole different pshat in the pasuk. But I think it's very empowering for those that don't get to spend their day learning and don't get to spend their whole day doing what we call spiritual work. And you think to yourself, what am I doing with my life? The answer is you're doing great things. You're getting schar. Two people can go to work and come out with a whole different schar. Says the Chifas Hashem Derechem, because that's pshat when we say it to Seim, Anu Amelim Vehem Amelim. We toil and Goyim toil. We toil and get reward, Goyim toil, they don't get reward. So most people think it means that we learn and they don't learn. So he says, that's not a chiddush. Of course, if I learn Torah and the guy does nothing, of course he's not going to get a reward. He says, no, Anu Amelim means I go to work 9 to 5 and he goes to work 9 to 5. I go to work 9 to 5 and I get schar as if I learned. He goes to work 9 to 5 and gets nothing. That's what that's what we say at a Siyum. Not I go to learn and he goes to work. Anu Amelim is we're both doing the exact same job. We're both putting in the same hours. Except my hours are spiritual hours and I get rewarded for my Kodesh Baruch Hu as if I did great work. And this guy gets nothing. He gets a paycheck. It's a whole, changes our entire outlook when we go to work. When we start our day and we think to ourselves, I wish I could be this and I wish I could be doing that. The answer is you can't. This is what Kodesh Baruch Hu wants of us. Rabbi Chana Wasserman used to say that the Aveir of Bittul Torah is only when you're able to learn and you can't learn. Person's in the bathroom. He's not even bittul Torah. You can't learn in the bathroom. When it's, what we call today, billable hours. When a person could be learning, when it can't. When you can't be learning because you have other responsibilities, don't feel guilty. Fakir, because Baruch Hu saying, this is great. I want you to do this. I want you to work. Realize that when a person is going to work for the right reason, then a person gets schar for the hours that he works. Oh, it's an amazing concept from the Mor v'Shemesh to think in this week's parasha that a person go to work for so many years and not be learning a word, not learning, he's working, he's an accountant, doctor, lawyer, whatever it may be, and he's getting reward in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as if he spent those hours learning Torah because his whole intention, his mindset is teilechu. I'm going. Why? Bichu kaisai. I'm going so I can keep your chukim, so I can live a Jewish life. It's not easy today. I need to make money. So that's my whole attitude. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will shower you with all the wonderful brachas that we find in the beginning of Parshas Bechukos.